A recent piece in the New York Times looked at the trend of rural voters choosing Republican candidates over Democrats. Wisconsin has seen a similar trend of rural voters electing Republican candidates, but our guest says there are a number of things Democrats could do to win back those voters.
Mike McCabe joins us now. He's founder of the grassroots political organization Blue Jean Nation. He wrote an opinion piece titled Five Things Rural Folks Need from Democrats. Mike, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get into your concrete suggestions, what do you see as the current relationship between rural voters and the Democratic Party, especially here in Wisconsin?
Well, Democrats used to be able to appeal to rural voters, but they don't anymore. And I think the reason's simple. The Democrats did a lot for rural communities and rural people in the 1900s, particularly in the first half of the 20th century. But it's been a really long time since Democrats focused on helping rural areas, and when they were doing a lot for rural people, they were rewarded. And you know, when I was growing up on a dairy farm, the area where I lived was sending Democrats to the state capitol to represent them. Now it's one of the most strongly Republican areas, and it's because people really felt that Democrats stopped paying attention to their concerns and their needs, and they felt abandoned and really have shifted to the Republican Party.
Do you see the Republicans as doing more and a better job of meeting the needs of those rural voters?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, today's Republicans are now in a position where a lot of their policies are actually very damaging to rural areas. And I think traditional Republicans, yesterday's Republicans, I think did have some things to offer rural people. But the way the Republican Party has evolved, they're now doing some things that actually are quite harmful to rural areas. And that's going to catch up with them eventually. So there's an opportunity for Democrats to win back a lot of people in rural areas and therefore be able to build a governing majority again. The Democrats have become a very urban party. That urban base is not enough to win them elections on a regular basis. There's some things that they could do to win back rural voters because the modern Republicans have created an opening for them.
Let's get into those policy areas now. The first you point out is the idea, you say, of restoring local control. We've heard that being a Republican policy, devolve power to states and local governments. Why do Democrats have room to maneuver there?
Well, that's one of the reasons why Republicans were able to win over a lot of rural folks is they were for local control. They were for home rule. The problem is that today's Republicans aren't for local control anymore. They're really controlling the locals. If you go to western Wisconsin, people are up in arms about sand mining. They would like to put some sensible rules and ordinances in place to deal with this. And state lawmakers in Madison have said you can't do anything. This industry can do as it pleases. You go to some place like Kewaunee County, on the other hand, they're really concerned about huge animal feedlots and the effects that can have on their drinking water and on their quality of life and air pollution and all the rest. And again, they're being told by state lawmakers in Madison, you don't have the authority locally to do anything to put rules in place affecting this industry. And so, in so many ways, local government officials no longer have control over their budgets. They no longer have the zoning authority that they once had. They no longer have control over taxation. So many of their local powers have been taken away by today's lawmakers, and so Republicans used to be for local control. Now they're really for controlling the locals. That creates an opening for Democrats, because one of the things that these local communities desperately want is home rule.
You also point out that for many local communities, the local schools, the local school districts are a community center, a big part of public life. And you say Democrats should make one of their policy items to keep those local schools open, not consolidate districts in often tough budget times. How important is that?
Oh, it's hugely important. You know, in rural communities more so than elsewhere, the local school is such an incredibly important community hub. I mean, everybody goes to the football game or the basketball game or the school play. The whole community shows up for these things. It's a gathering place for the entire community. And a lot of school districts in rural areas are being consolidated. Local schools are being closed in communities. Kids are being put on the bus for 45 minutes or an hour longer than they were already riding the bus, going to a school 20 or 30 miles away. And that's a huge loss, a crippling loss for a rural community. And today's Republicans actually are favoring policies that aggravate this. They're cutting money for public schools. They're actually taking away funding for public schools, and they're shifting it to private voucher school programs. In rural areas, there are a lot fewer private or parochial schools because there's not the population to support private schools. They're comparatively more reliant on public schools as a result, and public school funding is being cut. The money's being shifted to private voucher school programs. That hurts rural areas in particular. There again is something where current policy, the policies being pushed by today's Republicans, actually have a harmful effect on rural communities. That creates an opportunity for Democrats who have not yet risen to the occasion.
Talking to Mike McCabe right now. He says Democrats have been ignoring the real needs of rural Wisconsin. He says Republicans have too. He says that's hurting Democrats, though, when it comes to Election Day.
And you can join the conversation. Are you a rural voter? Is there anything Democrats could do to earn your vote? What issues are most important to you in state and also in national elections? Call us now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave us a comment over on the Central Time Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're talking to Mike McCabe right now. He's the founder of the political group Blue Jean Nation and the author of an opinion piece called Five Things Rural Folks Need from Democrats.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you live in a small town Wisconsin or rural part of the state? What do you make of the two political parties? Do you feel like either of them represents you well, or do you feel left out by both of them? What would it take to earn your vote for a candidate, for a party? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. Mike, getting back to your list of suggestions that Democrats should be working on but maybe aren't, the issue of road funding, huge in the state budget this year, but you focus in on specifically how the way we do our roads, how we fund and build our roads, has affected smaller towns around the state.
Yeah, you know, when you think about where our road funding is going, not only urban and suburban legislators, but even rural Republican legislators have been supporting state budgets that provide huge increases for major highway expansion, which benefits urban and suburban areas, while cutting funding for local road upkeep, and that's what is the lifeblood for local rural communities. In the last 15 years, we've seen a 50% increase on state spending for major highway expansion, but in the last decade, we've seen spending on local road upkeep cut from $300 million down to less than $200 million. Now, so $200 million for all of the upkeep of these rural roads. Now, when you think about that $200 million, compare that to the funding for just the four biggest highway expansion projects that are underway. $2.8 billion for just the four biggest expansion projects. And when you think about what those expansion projects do, whenever there's an expansion of highways in Wisconsin, they almost always bypass rural communities. Those highway bypasses can be a death sentence for a rural community because people don't go through those towns anymore, and all of a sudden the local cafe or restaurant closes, the local hardware store closes, the Main Street dies. That can be crippling. We've got transportation policies that are harmful to rural communities, and they're losing road funding while the urban and suburban highway expansion is being heavily fueled by increased borrowing. there's an example of policy that doesn't help rural areas at all. And a lot of times, it's the rural Republican legislators who are supporting the budgets that do this to rural communities. Well, that clearly is an opening for the Democrats.
Let's bring in a caller now. We've got Mary on the line in Madison. Mary, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Oh, what'd you want to bring up, Mary?
Well, actually, I'm originally from Kewaunee County, so Mike specifically mentioned that, and it is a huge issue up there. My sister actually was up there campaigning. She still lives in the area, and that is such a number one issue, is the water quality or lack thereof, and how there is no control and how they don't feel like they're being listened to. And also, the lack of control in the school system is a huge issue, along with the idea that it's just all about Milwaukee and Madison.
Mary, thank you so much for bringing those points up. And, Mike, this gets back to that local control issue you mentioned there. But have Democrats stepped up in any way on those local control issues? And again, she said the perception that Democrats may be focused on Madison and Milwaukee.
Well, for too long, Democrats sort of left the local control issue for the Republicans. And more recently, Republicans have gotten very interested in controlling the locals. And you know, it's not only the water quality issues. It's also, you don't have to go to places like Kewaunee County very many times, and you hear people talk about these high-capacity wells that are being drilled by these huge animal feedlots, and people are worried about that drying up their well. And you know, there are huge issues that they would like to have some control over, but their ability to decide these issues has been stolen from them by legislators who are down at the state capitol in Madison. So they don't feel like they're being listened to, and not only are they not being listened to, they're actually having their hands tied. They're not able to decide their own fate because local control is being stolen from them. And for a long time, Democrats sort of handed that issue to the Republicans, and Republicans became known as the party of local control. They're not the party of local control anymore, but Democrats haven't taken up that mantle.
Mike, as we wrap up, instead of getting to your last couple specific points, I'll point people toward the Central Time Facebook page. You've got a link to your full piece. But what happens if neither party is listening to rural voters? I mean, you've talked about concerns about people being disconnected, disaffected from politics in the state. Is that what happens? There's no home for them?
Well, you know, as the New York Times article that you mentioned at the top of the conversation said, you know, a lot of urban people are saying that, hey, rural people are voting against their own interests. And as the Times article pointed out, actually, the bigger problem is that a lot of rural people just aren't voting, because they don't feel like anybody's listening to them and earning their vote. And you know, we've got a situation in this country where over half of the rural population doesn't have access to high-speed internet, and most of the people can't get a cell phone signal. But who's really talking about seriously expanding access to those services? No utility company, no internet service provider is going to lay all the cable or put up the wireless transmitters needed to capture a few extra rural customers. It would take an effort along the lines of what the federal government did with the Rural Electrification Act in the early 20th century. In the early 1900s, rural communities were helped tremendously by rural electrification. Well, today their problem is that they can't get high-speed internet, they can't get cell phone service, they can't be full participants in the modern digital economy, they can't be full participants in American life. And nobody has taken that issue and really started to work on it. And it's a huge opportunity for Democrats, because today's Republicans are not at all inclined to want to do much to expand broadband access in rural areas.
We're all out of time, Mike. Thanks to Mike McCabe, founder of Blue Jean Nation. His piece on rural voters is linked on the Central Time Facebook page.
I'm Veronica Ricker.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. The medical profession is known for long hours and high stress, and a new study aims to figure out how big the problem is and whether it's getting worse.
The Mayo Clinic study finds that burnout has gotten worse for doctors over the last 3 years, raising concerns about keeping people in the profession and potential risks when it comes to providing care for their patients.
Dr. Tate Shanafelt joins us now. He's director of the Mayo Clinic Department of Medicine Program on Physician Well-Being. Dr. Shanafelt, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Well, we toss the word burnout around a lot in everyday conversation, but when we're talking about professional burnout, what do we mean?
It's a good question, and here we're referring to a specific syndrome that has three main parts, which are emotional exhaustion, depersonalization, or a low feeling of achievement in work. Emotional exhaustion is really losing your enthusiasm for your work. Depersonalization is starting to view people as objects rather than human beings, and that low sense of achievement is beginning to feel that you're not effective in your work, even if that's an inaccurate perception.
And what are doctor burnout levels like right now?
So they're strikingly high. At the time of our national study in 2011, the conjecture had been that about 30% of physicians were burned out. When we used objective measures at that time, the rate was actually 45%. And that study was designed to reassess physicians every 3 years. We looked again about 1 year ago at the end of 2014, and burnout had increased to 54%. So over half of U.S. physicians are now burned out. I think what was also notable is at both of those time points, we studied a probability-based sample of the general U.S. working population in all fields. And across all U.S. workers, burnout rates stayed relatively stable over the same three-year interval in the high 20s. So rates higher for physicians and a bit of a widening gap with workers in other fields.
So what's happened? That's quite a jump in the last, what was it, 3 or 4 years there. What happened?
Well, the medical field is certainly going through unprecedented changes right now with increasing productivity expectations for physicians, consolidation of medical practices, changes in insurance networks with often narrowing of networks and declining reimbursements. We're also in an era where new legislation has created regulations that have increased clerical burden associated with each patient encounter. Such as medication reconciliation requirements, electronic prescribing, and meaningful use of electronic health records. And all of these changes have often increased the clerical burden and interruptions, inefficiencies in a physician's workday that can often detract from some of those more meaningful aspects of practice and interacting and taking care of patients.
So when we're talking about a physician suffering from burnout, how does that manifest itself in the way that they do their job?
Well, what's concerning is that a number of studies by our group and others have found that professionally it can undermine quality of care. And this can happen in a number of ways. It has been shown that there is a strong link between burnout and medical errors. There also are links between burnout and cynicism and less empathy and compassion in the way physicians interact with their patients. So there are these very important professional repercussions in addition to some of the personal repercussions. Burned out physicians are also more likely to cut their clinical work hours or leave their current practice to move to a new practice, and so it can contribute to turnover, loss of continuity, and also even problems with access to physicians and specialties where there's a shortage.
And we hear a lot about physician errors. That's something people care a lot about. It affects patients personally. But when we look at the physician's work-life balance, how does that play out when we talk about burnout?
So work-life balance is one large contributing factor. We often think of sort of five key dimensions that contribute to burnout in physicians, which include excessive workload, inefficiencies in the practice environment, a loss of flexibility and control over work, a loss of meaning in work, and then problems with work-life integration, as you touched on. I think in that last regard, what's notable is that about 40% of physicians work more than 60 hours per week. That compares to about 7% of U.S. workers. And those high number of hours, as well as oftentimes the unpredictability of those hours occurring at nights and on weekends when physicians are on call, can create a lot of challenges integrating personal and professional life. And that is indeed a big contributing factor to burnout.
A lot of times we hear about medical school having a reputation for being incredibly grueling with internships and residencies. Does that at all contribute to the burnout that we're talking about, that doctors begin their careers coming off of this really grueling process of becoming a doctor in the first place?
It's a great question. We've looked at some national studies comparing individuals graduating from college and matriculating into medical school relative to college graduates pursuing other fields. And what's notable is that the mental health profile of those entering medical school with respect to rates of burnout, depression, quality of life, and a number of different dimensions is actually higher than their peers who are graduating and pursuing other fields. That flips fairly quickly over the first 12 to 24 months into medical school, at which point the medical students have lower mental health profiles in all of these dimensions than their peers, even though they entered medical school with better scores. I think traditionally it's long been felt that some of the origins of burnout begin in medical school, crescendo as physicians enter residency training, and then may decline once they enter practice. I think that that old view is starting to be questioned in this era of greater work hour regulations during the training process, which has helped the trainees to some extent, but has often shifted work to faculty physicians and physicians practicing, and such that now these rates of burnout we're seeing in the practicing physicians are very high, and in some cases are higher than the rates we see in resident studies.
So the question then is, what do we do about it? What do practices need to do to take care of their physicians and implement real changes?
It's an important question, and I think the fundamental premise is that physician burnout is largely a system-based problem. And American medicine is really at a tipping point now where over half of physicians are experiencing burnout. If I was telling you that we were reporting on a research study where a system-based problem had been identified that decreased patient safety for 50% of medical encounters in the United States, we would very swiftly move to address the problem using a system-based approach. You know, the reality is that's exactly the circumstance we're in, and we need healthcare organizations to address this problem. Some of the strategies for those organizations is really to focus on improving efficiency in the practice environment, delegate clerical tasks to support staff, create a practice environment that cultivates some flexibility and control over work. Studies also suggest that organizational approaches that help physicians optimize meaning in work and foster greater connection with colleagues have been found to reduce burnout in randomized trials. But addressing this problem really is the shared responsibility of both physicians and healthcare organizations. And a lot has been done on that individual physician front, but very little has been done on that organization and system level to try and reduce burnout.
I want to look a little more closely about what you mean when you say improving the efficiency of the practice environment, that kind of thing, because anecdotally, I've heard that a lot of doctors say the HMOs want them to spend less time with the patients to be more efficient and effective, and that that's stressing them out. Is that what you're talking about or something different?
I think something a little bit different. And here what we're largely talking about are the clerical burden that physicians spend a great deal of their time now interacting with the electronic health record, the process by which physicians have to bill for each patient encounter often takes many, many clicks now for something that in the past would have just been checking a box. Much of the documentation that's done now is done not so much to record the important characteristics of the patient's health condition and what needs to be done to evaluate and manage that, but more so putting in a lot of language to justify the billing associated with the visit. There's also a lot of other electronic correspondence now that happens through electronic patient portals and other activities that, again, just can lead to frequent interruptions and having physicians spend a great deal of their time, typically several hours a day, just interacting with the documentation requirements that aren't necessarily a core part of taking care of the patient or the clinical encounter itself. So where organizations have innovated and found ways to incorporate other members of the care team to help physicians spend much less of their time on that clerical aspect and more on the core medical decision-making and interactions with patients, that can pay big dividends.
And just very briefly as we wrap up here, how do you think patient care would change if we could address physician burnout successfully?
Well, I think that what we would see is more compassionate interactions between physicians and patients rather than sometimes hurried interactions or interactions where it feels like the physician is spending more time looking at the computer than they are interacting with the patient. And I think also would hopefully have some benefits with respect to more stability, less turnover in physicians, and that also is beneficial for patients as well when they build these longer-term relationships with their providers.
Dr. Schonefeld, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That was Dr. Tate Schonefeld, Director of the Mayo Clinic Department of the Medicine Program on Physician Well-Being.